All right, so let's dive into this legal battle. Metropolitan Life v. RJR Nabisco. It really shook things up on Wall Street. Think 1980s, the time of those huge leverage buyouts. And yeah, this case, one of the biggest ever. Imagine, just picture it. You've got these bonds worth millions, and boom, their value tanks because the company gets taken over in this like debt-fueled frenzy.
Oh, absolutely. A pivotal moment in corporate finance for sure. And you hit it right on the head. It wasn't just about the deal-making, the high stakes. It went deeper. It got into like the guts of contract law, you know? What do these bond agreements really mean? What happens when those agreements clash with these aggressive market tactics?
So paint the picture for us. What was going on that led to this massive legal showdown?
Well, it all started back in 1988. RJR Nabisco, the giant behind, well, you know, Oreo cookies, Winston cigarettes, they became a target, like in a bidding war. And the winner, a private equity firm, KKR, led by Henry Travis, a real Wall Street titan, and their strategy, a leveraged buyout, they loaded up RJR Nabisco with, get this, $24 billion in debt.
Whoa, $24 billion? I mean, that's still a mountain of money even now.
Oh, it was astronomical back then. Especially because, you know, before the buyout, RJR Nabisco had like a manageable debt, only around $5 billion. So this massive influx, yeah, it sent those bond values plummeting, just like you said.
Okay, yeah, so I see where the conflict's brewing here. But who were these bondholders, the ones who took the hit?
We're not talking about like small-time investors here. These were heavy hitters. Big institutions like MetLife, Jefferson Pilot, you know, those massive insurance companies. They had a lot, a real lot of RJR Nabisco bonds, and poof, their investments tanked practically overnight. If they were furious.
So how do they fight back? I mean, if the buyout was like technically allowed, how could they challenge it?
Well, their argument was built around this legal concept. It's called the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. Basically, it means, look, even if a contract doesn't specifically say you can't do this, there's still this expectation, right, that both sides are going to act in a way that doesn't, go against the spirit of the agreement.
Okay, so even if RJR Nabisco didn't, like, break the literal wording of the bond agreement, the bondholders are saying, hey, you went against the spirit of it. Taking on all that debt, putting our investments in jeopardy.
Exactly. They were saying, look, you took our money based on one set of assumptions, and then you totally changed the game without even asking us.
Kind of like if I lend a friend money for a used car, and then suddenly, bam, they go buy a Lamborghini with it. I'd feel a little misled.
Perfect analogy. That's exactly what MetLife and Jefferson Pilot were saying. We lent you money based on a certain level of risk, and you went and drastically increased that risk without a word to us.
So this brings up a big legal question then. Can this implied covenant, can it actually overrule like the actual written terms of a contract?
That is the million-dollar question. And that's what the court had to figure out. The bondholders, they took RJR Nabisco to federal court. Their argument, RJR's actions, yeah, maybe typically allowed under the bond agreement itself, but they were saying it was a clear breach of this good faith and fair dealing. They wanted RJR to be held accountable for the huge losses they'd suffered.
So it was like David versus Goliath, these big insurance companies going up against this Wall Street giant. So what happened? Did the court side with the bondholders, you know, the ones who felt cheated, or did RJR Nabisco win?
Well, in the end, the court actually sided with RJR Nabisco.
Really? Even though the bondholders lost so much? Tell me more about the court's reasoning. What were they thinking?
Their decision was very much grounded in like core contract law principles. It really sent a strong message about the limits of these implied covenants, especially when you're dealing with investors who, you know, aren't exactly rookies. They basically said, yeah, this implied covenant exists, but it doesn't mean you can create whole new terms, terms that weren't in the original agreement.
So the bondholders couldn't just like make up new rules after the fact because things went south?
Exactly. And the court really emphasized that the original bond agreement, it didn't say RJR couldn't take on more debt. Didn't forbid the leveraged buyout. And while they understood the bondholders took a hit, they said, look, clarity in the contract is key.
So it's like, it's a lesson to anyone making deals, right? Figure out the potential problems in advance and make sure everything, every detail is spelled out clearly in the contract, especially in markets that can change so quickly.
You got it. And the court pointed out MetLife, Jefferson Pilot, these weren't naive players. We're talking about sophisticated investors, huge insurance companies. They had teams of lawyers, analysts, you name it.
So they had every chance to look over those bond agreements, really understand what risks were there, and negotiate for specific protections if they wanted them.
Right. And the court basically said, you had the resources, you had the expertise. If you didn't protect yourselves in the contract, well, we can't just rewrite it now because you're unhappy with how things turned out.
That's a rough lesson to learn when, you know, millions of dollars are at stake. But it definitely shows how important due diligence is and having really, really good lawyers.
Absolutely. The message was loud and clear. If you're a sophisticated investor and you don't safeguard your interests in the contract itself, don't expect the courts to come in and change the rules just because the outcome wasn't what you hoped for.
So the court sided with RJR Nabisco. They really focused on the importance of sticking to the contract and the limits of this implied covenant idea. But what was the bigger impact of the case? Did it just sort of disappear into legal history, or did it have ripple effects?
Metropolitan Life v. RJR Nabisco, oh, it didn't just impact those involved, no way. This case, it sent shockwaves, through the entire financial world. Ripped through the legal landscape, too. It wasn't just some courtroom drama, it was a real turning point. Forced everyone, lawyers, investors, to take a good hard look at how they were approaching these bond agreements and risk management in general.
So like a wake-up call for Wall Street, a sign that, hey, the rules of the game are changing.
Yeah, exactly. The case really put a spotlight on like how crucial those explicit terms in the contract are and the potential pitfalls of leaning too hard on these implied covenants, especially with these complex financial deals. It was like a memo went out to every lawyer and investor. Get your contracts in order. Make sure you're covering all the bases. Every potential risk.
Okay, I'm with you. So tell me, how did this case actually change things? How are bond agreements drafted differently today because of it?
Well, see, before Metropolitan Life v. RJR Nabisco, these bond agreements, they often relied on more general language and, implied understandings. It was almost like this unspoken agreement about how things would work. But after this case, lawyers realized, nope, got to get way more specific, more granularly, no room for ambiguity.
So they started adding in all these detailed provisions, things that specifically addressed every possible risk they could think of, including, of course, the risk of a leveraged buyout.
Exactly. They wanted to avoid any situation where someone could say, well, hey, you didn't technically say I couldn't do this, so it must be okay, right? They started putting everything in black and white. Crystal clear, what was allowed, what wasn't.
So it's like this case forced everyone to up their game when writing contracts. Shifting from vague assumptions to like super meticulously crafted safeguards. But did this shift, did it really benefit the market as a whole, being so specific?
Oh, absolutely. By really clearly outlining the do's and don'ts, these new covenants, they provided much more protection for both sides, the bondholders and the companies issuing the bonds. Less uncertainty, less potential for disputes. It created a much more transparent, predictable playing field for everybody.
Sounds like a win-win then. So by clarifying the rules, this case actually made the market more stable and efficient.
In a lot of ways, yes. Metropolitan Life v. RJR Nabisco might not have been a victory for those specific bondholders, but it definitely led to these really positive changes in how these financial contracts are put together. More fairness, more transparency, more predictability in the market.
It's amazing how one court case can have such a big, lasting impact. It really shows you the power of legal precedent, how it can shape entire industries.
For sure. And it also shows how contract law itself is always evolving. As new business practices pop up, markets shift, these legal principles are tested and refined, leading to a system that's more robust and adaptable.
That makes sense. So we've talked about the immediate impact on the financial world, but let's dig a little deeper into the legal nitty-gritty of the case itself. The bondholders, they built their argument on that implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. But what about something like fiduciary duty? Did that come up at all?
Oh, that's a good question. Very insightful. Fiduciary duty, that's this legal concept that often comes into play when, one party has the special obligation to act in the best interests of another party. Think of like a trustee managing a trust fund for a beneficiary.
Got it. So were the bondholders saying that RJR Nabisco had like this fiduciary duty to protect their investments?
Oh, they definitely tried to make that argument. Their point was RJR, by taking their investment, owed them a higher level of care, more consideration, a duty to act in a way that wouldn't harm their interests.
Like they were saying, hey, you took our money, you have a responsibility to look out for us.
Yeah, exactly. But the court didn't buy it. They said bondholders, they're generally considered creditors, not equity holders. They lend money, but they don't own a part of the company like shareholders do. They're more like, a bank than a business partner.
So no superhero capes for the bondholders in this one. The court didn't see RJR as having this special heightened duty to act in their best interests?
Right, and that distinction is really key. Courts are usually hesitant to impose those fiduciary duties on companies when they're dealing with bondholders, precisely because of that creditor relationship.
It all circles back to that core idea of buyer beware. If you're going to play in the big leagues of finance, you better understand the rules and protect yourself.
That's the key takeaway for sure. The court acknowledged, yeah, this leveraged buyout had a negative impact on the bondholders, but they saw it as a legitimate business decision, one that fell within the lines of what the contract allowed. And they made it clear these were sophisticated investors. They should have known the risks involved, including, you know, the possibility of something like a leveraged buyout happening.
So maybe a tough pill to swallow for the bondholders, but it really reinforced that fundamental principle of contract law. Clarity is king.
Absolutely. That clarity benefits everyone in the long run. But it also makes you think, what if those bondholders, what if they had known in advance about this massive leveraged buyout coming? Could they have done anything to protect themselves?
Okay, now that's got me curious. What kind of safeguards could they have put in place? Let's explore those in the next part of our deep dive. So, okay, let's say those bondholders had like a magic crystal ball. They knew this huge leveraged buyout was coming. What could they have actually done to protect themselves?
Well, they could have, you know, played hardball back when those bond agreements were first being negotiated. Instead of just going along with the standard terms, they could have really pushed for specific covenants, things specifically designed to, shield them from this kind of move.
So basically, see the risk coming and build in protection right from the start. What would those covenants, those protections, have actually looked like?
Well, one thing they could have done is put limits on how much debt RJR Nabisco could take on, you know, negotiate a cap on those debt-to-equity ratios. So if the company goes over that limit, boom, certain protections kick in for the bondholders.
Like a financial alarm bell going off. Oh, ooh, things are getting a little risky here.
Exactly. Or another option, they could have tied certain actions to the company's credit rating. Let's say the buyout happens, the company's credit ratings takes a hit. Well, then the bondholders could demand early repayment of their bonds or, you know, other concessions.
It's almost like an insurance policy, right? Against the company's financial health taking a turn for the worse.
Exactly. And, you know, another thing, they could have negotiated for these change of control provisions. So if ownership of the company changed hands in a big way, like in a leveraged buyout, the bondholders would have specific rights.
So they'd have some leverage then, right, to renegotiate or even walk away from the deal if things got too dicey.
Right, exactly. It's all about thinking ahead, you know, anticipating those what-if scenarios and building in mechanisms that'll protect you.
This is fascinating. It really makes you wonder, why didn't those bondholders, these big institutions, why didn't they push harder for these kinds of protections?
Yeah, that is the question, isn't it? Maybe they didn't really think a buyout this massive was likely, or maybe they thought, hey, the potential return here is worth the risk. It's also possible they just didn't have the leverage, you know, the clout, to get RJR to agree to those concessions.
So it's a reminder that even the smartest investors, they can miss things, miscalculate the risk.
Oh, for sure. And it shows you those contract negotiations, they're a delicate dance, both sides trying to balance the risk and the reward.
Well, I think we've really dug deep into Metropolitan Life v. RJR Nabisco today. We've covered the facts, the legal arguments, the court's decision, and how it affected the financial world. Any final thoughts before we wrap up our deep dive?
I'd say this case, it's a great lesson for anyone dealing with these complex financial transactions, not just lawyers and investors. It shows you just how important clear communication is and careful planning and, really thinking through those potential risks. It also reminds us that contracts, they have real power. Understanding what they mean, all those little nuances, that's crucial for protecting yourself.
Well said. This case, it still matters, even all these years later. Gives us some real insight into how finance works, how it's always changing, and those enduring principles of contract law.
And it reminds us, even when things seem impossible, those legal battles can be fought. Precedents get set. And the world of finance, well, it can be reshaped.
That's a wrap on another fascinating deep dive. We'll be back next week with a brand new case, ready to tackle more legal mysteries and explore those stories behind the headlines. So until then, stay curious, stay informed, and as always, thanks for joining us on the deep dive.